And joining us on Perspectives today is Michael Blanding. Michael's an award-winning magazine writer with nearly 20 years of experience writing long-form narrative and investigative journalism. He's a senior fellow at the Schuster Institute for Investigative Journalism at Brandeis University. He's the author of The Coke Machine, The Dirty Truth Behind the World's Favorite Soft Drink, and also numerous articles for different publications, including The Nation, The New Republic, Consumer's Digest, Boston, and the Boston Globe magazine. And he is a map lover. And so the latest book is called The Map Thief. And it's an incredible book. And if it sounds like kind of Indiana Jones and the Temple of the Lost Ark and King Solomon's Mines, all of that, well, it's just a little bit of everything, except this is all true. Michael, thank you very much for being with us here today.
Thanks for having me. It's great to be here.
Now, first of all, let's talk a little bit about your background as far as journalism and investigative journalism. Have you always wanted to be a writer? Like when you were younger, did you? Because I know when I was younger, my dad said that I would always want microphones and other stuff like that for Christmas.
Yeah, absolutely. I was always the kid who was writing, fantasy stories and dreamed of being a novelist someday. And in college, I was writing fiction, and the only problem was the fiction I was writing was terrible. And so it wasn't until after I graduated that I discovered journalism. And the first time I wrote a journalism article, everything clicked. I just found it so much easier to write about real life than to write about these characters in my head. And been 20 years, and I haven't looked back.
Now, when a lot of people have, I guess, different stereotypes or myths, misconceptions about investigative journalism, and as you know, in this day and age now, a lot of the journalism that we see, us who are real journalists will say, ow, that's kind of like, yikes. It's kind of on the edge. It's more entertainment instead of anything. It's it's for ratings and a bunch of stuff like that. So when you tell people that you're an investigative journalist, do they kind of look at you like, what dirt are you trying to dig up or something like that?
Yeah. It's hard to sometimes know the right term to use for what I do. I do use the word investigative journalist because I think it implies a certain kind of rigor in reporting that I think is really important, as you say. But it can make people a little bit on edge. I sometimes refer to myself as a narrative nonfiction writer or a creative nonfiction writer because I think that's an equal aspect of what I do. But it's just about storytelling, and I think in order to tell good stories, you need to do the research, you need to have the background so you can do it authoritatively.
We're visiting with Michael Blanding. Michael is the author of the latest book, The Map Thief, the gripping story of an esteemed rare map dealer who made millions stealing priceless maps. And we'll get into that in just a little bit more. But at the beginning of the program, I also mentioned that one of your other books is about The Coke Machine, The Dirty Truth Behind the World's Favorite Soft Drink. And I'm an avid Coke Zero drinker, much to the, determine of my wife, who would rather me drink water. But tell us about that book.
Yeah, that book, which came out in 2010, started as a magazine article I wrote for The Nation, in which I discovered there were a lot of people that were protesting Coke. They were holding large protests on college campuses and trying to get their colleges to stop serving Coke. And when I started kind of digging beneath the surface and asking why, I found all kinds of skeletons in the closet of the Coca-Cola company, including murder of union members in Colombia and environmental pollution in India and Mexico, and then right here at home, issues around childhood obesity and the company intentionally increasing sizes over and over with these sugary drinks. And so it really highlighted the contrast between the image that Coke presents of itself as being this, mom and apple pie and teaching the world to sing. And so I really wanted to explore that and to look more deeply at that. And that's how that book came about.
Now, this other one, The Map Thief, and I mentioned also at the beginning that you like to collect maps. How did you, not stumble? Because as an investigative journalist, you probably already had some ideas and probably, whenever you go anywhere, you're listening for different things. So tell us about The Map Thief. How did that come about?
Well, I'd like to pretend that I'm more deliberate about the way I find my stories than yes. I am, but, you know, oftentimes the way I find my stories is just a conversation with someone at a cocktail party or over dinner, and that was the case with this. I was at a party with a bunch of journalists and lamenting the fact I didn't have any good stories to write, and a friend of mine said, "Oh, you know, this Forbes Smiley just came out of prison. Maybe you should see if he'll talk to you." And I'd remembered the story. He was a fairly big news story back in 2005 when he was caught for stealing maps out of libraries. And but he'd never talked to the press before. And I got lucky. I was going to write a magazine article, and I approached him, and he agreed to talk to me. And I sat across the picnic table in Martha's Vineyard with him for 4 hours, and by the end of the 4 hours, I was convinced that this was not a magazine article, this was a book, that it was just so fascinating, and he was such a complex character, and there were so many crazy twists and turns that I just had to turn this into a book.
We're visiting with Michael Blanting. Michael is the author of the recent book, The Map Thief. Now, this book also, Michael, you mentioned Forbes Smiley, who is the gentleman who was in jail, and according to the book cover jacket, it says he was a respected map dealer. And a lot of people might wonder, well, what is the big deal about maps? Because, you know, I can go to a gas station, or I can go to the Texas tourist section and get me a map. But you're talking about specific types of maps here, priceless maps.
Yeah, these maps are very rare. They're very valuable. We're talking about maps, and particularly in Smiley's case, we're talking about maps going all the way back to the early 1500s, 1600s, 1700s, and they are maps that were created by explorers and cartographers during the age of exploration and trade and colonialism, and they really played a part in history. A lot of these maps were really the tipping point in creating empires or creating trade routes, claiming territory, and because of that, they're very significant to collectors. And in addition, they're really beautiful works of art. You know, you look at some of these things, and the artistry and the detail in them puts them right on par with, you know, an engraving by Rembrandt or a painting by Vermeer. And they were really thought of as art objects back in the time they were made. So they really work on a number of levels for people.
Now, it's sometimes when we watch movies or documentaries or read books, we hear about the maps being written on leather or parchment or something like that. Did you was the map thief involved in any of this type of these type of maps?
There were a few maps that he stole that were on parchment, but the majority of his maps were on linen paper, and they were copper engraved maps. So basically, there would be a copper engraved plate that would be pressed onto the paper, and that's how the maps were created. And you could get about 1,000 maps from one plate. Of course, over the years, most of those maps have disappeared. They've been cast aside or lost, and so of that 1,000, you may have 20 or 10 that survive today, and most of them are in libraries or other institutions, and the other ones are very very competitively fought over by collectors.
Well, you know, your book does not read at all like, if someone says, oh, it's investigative journalism, it's going to be, you know, kind of exciting and boring, a lot of facts. But it reads, like a novel, you know, action thriller novel. And tell me a little bit about, because there's people out there that obviously have probably not read the book, but we want them to. The fact that you're talking about these kind of maps, how did Forbes go about deciding, you know, what maps to get, and then also how did he go about letting people know that he had these available?
Yeah, well, first of all, thank you for saying that about the way that the book reads, because as I said, I once had dreams of being a great American novelist, and so even though I write nonfiction now and every word is true, I really try to strive towards writing in that kind of style to recreate that kind of a fictional narrative. But the interesting thing about the map trade as I started looking into it is that the, you know, because there were multiple copies of these maps that were printed back hundreds of years ago, it's not like the fine art trade where there's only, you know, one copy of a painting, and in order to steal it, thieves have to go in the library at night and take it off the wall, and then everybody knows it's stolen. Smiley could go into these libraries and request these maps and fold them up and put them in his pocket and walk out, and then he could sell them right in broad daylight on the open market. And people who bought them had no idea that they were stolen. He would come up with a cover story and say that he was selling off an old collection from a esteemed collector up in Boston, and they bought the story and they bought the map, and then they would display it right on their wall in broad daylight. So it was really the perfect crime in so many ways until he got caught.
Now, did the librarians think anything of it? I guess not taking his name, because I guess a lot of people go out and borrow stuff inside the library, but I guess they just figured, this, because you look at pictures of him, he looks like a respectable gentleman, perhaps a map collector. But the fact that he would go in there and do exactly as what you said, I mean, that just seems like too easy.
Yeah, well, I don't mean to imply that there wasn't security in the libraries, because there was. I mean, many of these libraries had measures where you could only go in, the reading room with a piece of paper and a pencil, and had to leave everything behind. They had cameras, they had, watchful librarians. But the problem was that he was such a respected member of the map trade business. And in some cases, he had been studying these things for decades and knew more about them than the librarians did. And so he would go in, and he was really looked upon as almost a trusted colleague by these people. And they afforded him special privileges. They would let him bring in books and wear a blazer that had a pocket that he would slip maps into, and he would request books that he knew contained a rare map that the library may not have even cataloged as containing that map, and he'd rip it out and secret it away and sell it for $20,000 or $30,000. So he really took advantage of the trust that was placed in him. And when his crimes were finally revealed, some of the librarians in particular were just devastated, or felt really, really betrayed, and still haven't gotten over that kind of betrayal.
We're visiting with Michael Blanding. Michael is the author of the recent book, The Map Thief. It's an investigative journalist piece about Forbes Smiley, who is the map thief. And when you talked about the amount of money that he would sell these maps for, according to the articles and the reviews of your book here, it says that when he pled guilty in 2006, he had stolen millions of dollars worth of maps. That's incredible.
Yeah, it really surprised a lot of people. It certainly surprised me when I first started hearing about this story, just how much people are willing to pay for these things. And we're talking tens and thousands of dollars, even upwards of $100,000. And Smiley's thefts, we're not completely sure how many he stole. He admitted to taking 97 maps for $3 million. The actual number could be much higher. But, he was really good at what he did, and he bought and sold these things in a really competitive market, and he made a ton of money from it.
There are several illustrations in the book, including pictures of Forbes Smiley himself, but you have some interesting maps in there. One of them that caught my interest was the one that appears to be of the Louisiana Purchase.
Mm-hmm.
Is that it?
Yeah, that's a French map of Louisiana by Guillaume Delisle. I think I'm pronouncing that right. And that map is really interesting because in that period, it hadn't yet been settled who was going to own the interior of North America. And so you had this great sort of cartographic war that went on in the middle of the 1700s for about 50 years between England and France. And England would draw one map and show the boundary lines in one place, and then France would come out with another map and show them in another place. And that particular map shows this huge swath of Louisiana in the middle of the continent that looks enormous, and then the English colonies just kind of tucked into the corners on the eastern seaboard. But it really did determine the outcome of history, that cartographic war ended up causing a real war with the French and Indian War, which ended up in a British victory, and secured the English-speaking populace of North America. So maps really do have a role to play in history.
Michael, perhaps you didn't get to see this, but was there something that perhaps Forbes talked about, a special map that you go like, wow, or what map did he talk about or which map did you see that surprised you?
Oh, there were so many. I mean, I made it a point to go to every single one of the libraries that he stole from and to request every single map that had been returned, had been recovered from his staff. And I would, you know, they routinely surprised me. Maps that I saw a picture of that I thought was small turned out to be 4 feet wide, and some turned out to be, you know, 3 inches wide. You know, just the artistry in some of these maps. I'm from New England, and so I would look at these maps from New England and just see the attention to detail and how they depicted parts of the area that I was from. And you know, I could understand the appeal. There were certain maps that I wouldn't have minded slipping into my pocket and hanging on my wall. I mean, these really are these beautiful objects you could just look at for hours, and you can understand why people are willing to pay so much for them, and you can understand why Smiley was so tempted to walk out with them. But I really hope that there never comes a day when libraries put these under lock and key and only give people digital images, because it's nothing like holding the real thing in your hand and feeling the paper and looking at the colors of the ink on the page.
We're visiting with Michael Blanding. Michael is the author of The Map Thief, and it's the story of Forbes Smiley, who is the map thief. And, Michael, what about, you know, I'm sure that as you mentioned a little bit a while ago when you were growing up as a kid, and, you know, we all read stories and about adventures and explorers, and so I guess the maps that a lot of us think about are treasure maps, okay? Because we heard about, you know, pirates and Treasure Island and all that stuff. So did any of those come into play, perhaps, that you were hoping that you would see something like that existed?
Well, as I've told people, you know, in this case, they weren't treasure maps. The treasure was the maps, because they were worth
so much money.
But yeah, I mean, you look at these things, and it really does look like that map from the front of Robert Louis Stevenson's Treasure Island, which I don't know if you know the story behind that.
No, I don't. Share it with us.
That book, but it actually came from the map, that the map came first, and then Stevenson wrote the story to go along with it. I think he was entertaining his young nephews or something on a rainy afternoon and drew the map for them and then created the story to go along with it. And you know, when I was a kid, I would love to read fantasy novels, and in each one of those books, it would always start with a map that would, you know, have the misty mountains or the, you know, the windswept deserts, and just imagine what it was like and follow the roots of the characters on those quests. So I really felt, when I was looking at a lot of these maps for this book, I really felt kind of in the same mindset of thinking about what it was like for John Smith exploring New England or Virginia and you know, rowing up the rivers in an open boat and sighting distant hills with his sextant and trying to create the landscape that we all know so well today, because it's, you know, all mapped by satellites. But back then, it really was terra incognita. It really was an adventure for these people to make these maps and make them accurately.
And a lot of this is, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think in the, oh my gosh, I just forgot the Undaunted Courage, the book about Lewis and Clark. The fact that they were, in some cases, they were drawing the maps as they crossed the land.
Yeah, absolutely, and that's what's really so amazing. You look at some of these old maps, and what's surprising isn't how crude they are. What's surprising is how accurate they are. And you know, I would, over the course of my reporting for the book, I would, for example, I flew from Boston to Washington D.C. for you know, to report certain aspects, and just looking down at Boston Harbor from the plane, and then, you know, thinking about the map that I had just seen that Smiley had stolen of Boston Harbor, and realizing that, you know, back then they didn't have the privilege of flying in an airplane over the landscape and being able to just sketch what they saw. I mean, they really had to use scientific methods and geometry and trigonometry to try to figure out the land and draw these boundary lines and figure out trade routes and everything. And it was really amazing the kind of job they were able to do with really rudimentary equipment.
I'm sure, Michael, that we're visiting with Michael Blanding. He is the author of The Map Thief, the story of Forbes Smiley, who was the map thief. I'm sure that some of our listeners may be wondering if any of these maps that Forbes stole were recovered, and if they were, you know, what happened to, because a lot of these people, I'm sure, bought them innocently.
Yeah, so Smiley sold most of the maps to three dealers that he had been in business with for a long time, and at least they say they had no idea they were stolen. He came up with this cover story that he, you know, was selling off this old collection, and they bought it, they then sold them on to collectors. And so when the FBI came in and were investigating the case, they told these dealers, hey, you know, we won't go after your collectors if you get the maps back from them. And the dealers, for the most part, paid back the collectors and returned the maps, and they were the ones left holding the bags. So some of them are out hundreds and thousands of dollars, and they're the real financial victims anyway of Smiley's crimes.
We're visiting with Michael Blanding. Michael is an investigative journalist, and he is the author of the book, The Map Thief. Michael, what about, you mentioned earlier about the, you know, the fact that these maps, literally, you know, millions of dollars in maps were stolen and were sold. A lot of people, I guess, did not realize that one of the words that's mentioned in the cover of your, inside the cover of your book is the fact that this is a very cutthroat business.
Yeah, this really surprised me when I was researching the story. You know, I think we have this image of the map collecting as, you know, a bunch of older gentlemen in blue blazers in the back rooms of libraries, you know, very sort of genteelly discussing trades. And it is that to some extent, but there's also this side of the business that's really competitive. And you have, you know, if anybody's ever... if your listeners are collectors and they know what it's like to try to fill that hole in your collection of that that one item you're missing. And in the case of these maps, they're not a lot out there. There's not that many copies of some of these rare maps out there. And there's a lot of competition and people going into auctions and real bare-knuckle kind of bartering and undercutting each other and competing against each other. To some extent, Smiley just was not equipped to compete in that world, and he began getting more and more in debt and more behind the eight ball, and finally looked down at a map in front of him and realized he could fold it up and sell it the next day for $30,000, and that was really the slippery slope that led to him becoming a full-fledged map thief from a map dealer. So I wouldn't say, you know, it's not necessarily the fault of the trade or other dealers that that he became a thief. That was the decision he made himself, but it certainly played into the aspect of the crime.
I would imagine also that you writing history and a lot of journalism pieces, the fact that perhaps, you know, even now during Afghanistan and what's happening in Iraq, but during the Second World War, I'm sure that, you know, maps were very much treasured, you know, to be captured by the enemy. There were, if or even the Civil War. I know that, you know, there's that famous letter that was supposedly passed on and included some of the of Lee's plans. And that's what sometimes led to a lot of these exciting adventures that you've written about, the maps.
Yeah, I mean, map thievery goes back, you know, you could say it goes back to the Roman Empire when the emperors used to keep their maps in a locked vault. But you can go back to the Revolutionary War that Benedict Arnold was caught because he was carrying a map of West Point to sell to the British. And you could look at the modern day that, you know, the way that maps are used in battle. Now they're satellite maps, but it's the same kind of sophistication and people trying to steal secrets from the enemy that contribute to advantage in battles or in trade. And so, you know, if you think about the way we use maps today, we probably use them more than ever in history, even though ironically they're not paper maps. But, you know, we all have our maps on our phone and all these maps are instantly downloadable from satellite and maps are probably used now to make decisions more than ever. So maps certainly haven't gone away.
Michael, I mentioned at the beginning of the interview that you are also a a map collector. Tell us a little bit about your hobby.
Well, I have a very modest collection of maps. When I was in college, I worked for a professor who had a collection of subway maps on his walls. And I thought that that was such a cool way to decorate his house that when I started traveling after school, I started collecting subway maps. And not the kind of foldable subway maps, but the actual maps that are on the wall of the station. So I would go and either go to the Transportation Museum in a certain city, or I would go, just ask a worker if they had a copy of a map available. And so I've got about a dozen of these subway maps framed on my wall, and it really is such a conversation piece. They really, every time I look at a subway map of London or Washington, D.C. or Barcelona, it brings back memories of my travels there and the time there, and people are always asking me about certain aspects of, or, you know, their own memories of certain cities. And so they're not everybody's cup of tea, but I love looking at them. I just could look at them for hours.
Well, I'm sure that everybody, every kid at least, had either a weekly reader map or a National Geographic map that they got, and they had it up on their wall at least for a little while.
Sure. Yeah, and I've got two kids myself, and they know of my obsession with maps, and so they are always pointing out maps to me, and always, they're able to find their way around the city because I'm always pointing out things to them about maps, so they're well-trained.
Well, why don't you tell us a little bit about more about your book. Is there a website they can go to? Is there additional information they can find out about the Map Thief? Where would they go, Michael?
Yeah, folks can just go to themapthief.com, and that will take them right to my website. And the book is out just out in paperback, and they can order a copy there, or they can learn more about it, and they can see pictures of some of the maps that I put on my website as well.
And some of the book actually is also available as an e-book or a Kindle, Nook, anything like that, correct?
It is, yes.
Okay, Michael, well, thank you very much for being with us here today. We've been visiting with Michael Blanding. Michael is an investigative reporter, journalist, and he is the author of the recent book, The Map Thief. It just came out in paperback. And The Map Thief is the story of Forbes Smiley, a respected map dealer who turned obsessive map thief. And I don't want to give away the story, but it, as I mentioned, it reads very much like an action mystery novel. So, again, it's Michael Blanding, The Map Thief. And you said it was mapthief.com?
Themapthief.com, yes.
Okay, themapthief.com. Thank you very much for being with us here, Michael.
All right, great. Thanks for having me, Louis. It's been great.
We've been visiting with Michael Blanding. Michael is the author of The Map Thief.